Fourth and final hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on this Thursday afternoon. We look forward to this time every Thursday because we have a weekly chat with Elliot Freeman from Sportsnet. Hockey Night in Canada, 31 thoughts. He does it all, and he does a really good job at it. Tonight, the Predators are in Calgary or Calgary, depending on who you talk to. Preds and Flames, tonight at 8 o'clock. I'll have pregame for you starting at 7. Everything heard right here on 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland, that's me. Chase McCabe alongside.
That's me.
Willie D is in Calgary, or is it Calgary? Let's find out from Elliot. Elliot, is it Calgary or Calgary?
I got to tell you, if you know anybody who pronounces it Calgary, they are from millions of miles from that city. I have never heard anyone there pronounce it that way.
Terry Crisp. Never. Terry Crisp. Crispy does that.
He's got to do it on purpose then, just to get a rise out of it.
So you're saying it's not Calgary. Chris Mason does.
It's
He's from Red Deer.
Not Calgary. No, it's not.
No, wait a minute. Does Chris say Calgary?
No, he's just Calgary.
He does? Okay. I tried to throw Chris Mason in there because he's from Red Deer. I tried to just throw him into the conversation. I just completely made it up, too. So let's leave Chris Mason off that list. Okay. I was just curious. I've heard a lot of Calgary, and I was just, you know, just curious if that's a thing or not. And you just answered that. Speaking of that team, they have found out that Giordano is not going to be in the lineup tonight. And I guess he's dealing with a hamstring injury. Surgical procedure required, but it's not going to be long-term, but for the foreseeable future, he will not be in the lineup, and that's good news for the Preds because they won't have to face him tonight. Calgary's captain.
That's great news for you guys.
Yep.
Yeah, it's great news for you guys. And to be honest, it's good news for Calgary, too, in the sense that I think they were really worried that he was seriously injured when he got hurt on Tuesday night against San Jose. There's some guys, when they leave a game, people roll their eyes and say, oh, he's got a hangnail or something like that. And there's other guys who leave a game and people are sitting there saying, that's bad because he never leaves. And Mark Giordano would be in column number two. When he leaves a game, it's bad news. I know they were really worried about it. You won't see him tonight, which is good news for you guys, but they'll take it knowing that it's not the worst-case scenario.
Well, the Predators were back at it Tuesday night doing what they've done all year long, having all of us trying to figure out what team is going to show up, and we found out it was the good team, the team that went into Winnipeg and won again. They've beaten Winnipeg there in the peg twice now in the last 2.5 weeks, and they came away with a nice OT win. And they've gone in there, like I said, and collected 4 points against the Jets in the last 2.5 weeks. Now the question is, what team will be in Calgary tonight?
If I knew that, I'd be playing Powerball.
And if we knew that, we would join you.
you know what this is to me tonight? Like, Craig Simpson, for those of you guys who don't know him, Craig Simpson works with me on the broadcast. He's a game analyst. Craig was, a 50-goal scorer once in the NHL. He won a couple of Stanley Cups with the Edmonton Oilers. And then he coached for a while after his career, and now he works in broadcasting. And he always said to me, be wary of the team and the player who does really well when the season's over. And I always think about that. It's something I look at a lot. Like, how well does somebody do when the games really matter? And I'm looking at your team tonight, and I think this is going to tell us a lot. Because you guys looked out, and now you've crawled back to the point where you're almost there. Like, if you beat these guys in regulation tonight, you are right behind them with games in hand. You've got games in hand against everybody, and right now Calgary's the last playoff team in the West. Like, to me, if you guys show up and play hard tonight, it doesn't matter what the outcome is. You just show up and you play hard. You're telling David Poile that there's a heartbeat there and it's coming. But if you flop, especially without their number one defenseman and the league's number one defenseman last year, you're saying, holy smokes, we don't have a pulse. So I think this is a huge, huge indicator of where you guys are going.
Good stuff. Elliot Friedman on the line with us. Do you pronounce it Bufflin or Bifuglian? No, all kidding aside, Dustin Bufflin.
Wow.
That's pretty funny.
Elliot, I'm sorry.
What? I used to do that all the time.
I got a good laugh at it.
So, you know, it looks like this odd story that we've talked about all year long is maybe headed for some closure. I asked David Poyle about it on Tuesday. Obviously, he had to be very careful with his words. But yeah. I just kind of wanted him to weigh in like a general manager's approach to, you know, if this guy, you have to find out, is this guy want to play? Does he want to retire? Is he even capable of playing this year? How is this all going to play out? Obviously, you're much closer to the ground on this story than us.
Well, it's going to play out at some point. It didn't happen today. At noon Eastern time, so 11 your time every day, people get put on waivers. A team has the option to put a person on waivers. And at some point, it hasn't happened yet, so the next time is the opportunity is tomorrow. He's going to get put on waivers, and he's going to be put on a special kind of waivers, which is unconditional waivers to terminate his contract. That lasts for 24 hours. The next day, at noon the next day, somebody has the opportunity to claim him. Now, if you claim him, you have to accept his deal. And Bufflin has a cap hit of $7.6 million. And this year, it's a prorated $8 million in real cash, and next year, it's $6 million in real cash. I don't think anybody's doing that. I think he's going to go unclaimed, and then I think the Jets are going to terminate his deal, at which point he'll be able to sign with anybody. Now, from what I've heard this year, and I'm pretty sure about this, he hasn't skated. He's been injured all year. He had an ankle injury last year. He thought it would get healthy over the summer with rest. It didn't, and he hasn't skated all this year. He's not going to play this year. I do think in the summer, or even now actually, there's going to be a lot of teams, if not everybody's going to reach out to him and say, how are you feeling? Because if Dustin Bufflin's playing and he's healthy, he's a difference maker. Earlier in the year when he told the Jets he wasn't going to play, I heard he wanted to retire. And I wasn't the only person like that. A lot of us heard that. But it's been denied, but nobody really knows for sure how he feels. Also, and I'm not saying this to make fun of Bufflin because I'm a big guy myself. He's a really big guy, and conditioning. You know, is he going to be ready to play? So I think he'll be a free agent. I think almost everybody's going to talk to him. And like David Poyle said, you're going to have to determine his health to play and his willingness to play.
Bad news here, good news in St. Louis. Saw where Tarasenko was actually skating this morning. I know he's still a ways away, but this is the start of the process. I was kind of hoping he would not lace him up the rest of the season. What are you hearing on that front, and how available do you think he's going to be the rest of the way, in your opinion?
Well, he started skating last week, and I saw that report this morning about him skating today. I think some teams were wondering if St. Louis would hire him. If St. Louis would hide him until the playoffs. Now, in 2015, when Chicago won the Stanley Cup, Patrick Kane was injured, I think, in January or February. And he did not play the rest of the regular season. They used the extra cap space to acquire another center, Antoine Vermette, and then miraculously for game one of the playoffs, Kane was healthy. And in the playoffs, the salary cap doesn't count anymore. So the Blackhawks were smart. They used the time to hide Kane, to add another player, and Vermette was a key piece for them as they won the Stanley Cup. I think some of us wondered if St. Louis would try that. Now, a few years ago, they had an injury to Alex Steen, and I asked Doug Armstrong back then if he would do it. This was the year after Chicago won the Cup, and he said no. He said if a player was healthy enough to play, he was going to play him. So I think you have to assume that because Tarasenko is skating, I don't think he's ready to return, but I think he's getting closer. Despite that, I do think St. Louis is going to try to get a forward. They're in on Chris Kreider from the Rangers. I believe they're in on Mike Hoffman from Florida. Two different players. Kreider is more of a bruiser and a scorer. Hoffman is a pure scorer. He's got an incredible shot, a great release, but he's not a bruiser. But I think that St. Louis is going to try to add a forward. I just think the question is, you know, if Tarasenko's back and healthy, do they have to move something out to make cap room, or do they try to hide Tarasenko until the playoffs? But if he's skating now, it's going to be harder to do that.
Talking to Elliot Friedman, Sportsnet, Hockey Night in Canada. He joins us every Thursday at 1 o'clock. I want to go back to something from your 31 Thoughts column and a conversation you had with David Poile as we were discussing earlier, because what stood out to me was I asked him a similar question when he was with us on Tuesday about the long-term contracts and how he monitors that as a general manager to, you know, and if he worries about his team getting too close. I thought it was interesting that you brought that up, and his answer was, I don't want to think that that is the case. I refuse to believe that's true. What did you make of that answer? Because I find it interesting.
And also, like, the advantage in a phone conversation, guys, is, you know, when you write it, it's hard to convey, you know, the emotional response or the verbal response. That's why I tried to paint the picture by writing about the pauses and stuff. When we spoke and he said that, the reaction I got was, he's wondered about that himself. Like, I think he's wondered if that is part of the problem, that there's too many long-term deals and that some of his players have lost some edge. But I think if he says that to me, you know, that could be like a grenade going off in your dressing room. You have to be very careful as a general manager when you say things like that, because, for example, you know, you guys reading it and the fans reading it in Nashville, you can start to tee off on the players and say, our GM doesn't think they care anymore, or our GM doesn't think their heart is in it. So what that says to me is he's concerned about it. He won't come out and say it because he doesn't want that to be used against his group, but he's weighing at least the possibility of it. He just either doesn't think 100% that's the case, or he doesn't want the public to think that that's the case. But I think what it says to me is it also is that when he comes out and says, I'm willing to consider just about anything except the obvious, that he's going to at least listen on some of to test the value in some of those guys.
So, I mean, we've talked about Kyle Turris many times since you've been coming on with us, and it's been out there that he's tried to move him and hasn't been able to, even though Turris is playing much better. Mikael Granlund is an unrestricted free agent. He's playing better under John Hines. Who are some of the guys that you think he realistically could be able to move if he wanted to?
Well, I think Turris is still very, very difficult, if not impossible. You know, Granlund, the better he plays, like, I think the thing now is, you know, if you guys win tonight and you're a point out of the playoffs or 2 points out of the playoffs if it goes to OT, I don't see him trading Granlund if Granlund's going. Now, you know, I mean, again, he could be knocked away with a great offer. He could get presented with something else. I think you could get something for Granlund as long as Granlund continues to play well, but it's always the vicious cycle of if he plays well, you might want to keep him too. Like, we know the names that have been out there, you know, Turris, Granlund, Smith, some of your other guys. You know, I still think it's going to be hard. I just think, you know, unless you're willing to move guys like Forsberg and Arvidsson, which I don't think he really wants to do, then I think it's going to be hard to move the needle.
Do you think that he could be in a position to make a hockey trade? And by that I mean upgrade, you know, on defense or maybe another forward, but I look more on the back end.
I think absolutely. I think if you're willing to give up the right thing, like, look, I mean, let's work backwards. Who's he not trading? Well, he's not trading Josi. He's not trading Ellis. And he's not trading Ekholm. Is there anybody else you think is untouchable besides that?
Who did you say again?
Ellis, Josi, Ekholm.
Fabro.
Yeah.
Okay. I'd probably throw Fabro in.
I'd put Fort, well, on the back end, yeah.
On the back end.
No, but, like, would you say Forsberg's untouchable?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's take these five guys out.
Rene, of course.
Yeah, Rene. So then what are you going to be able to move that's going to get you value?
And that's the tough question. I mean, Johansson, that's a hefty contract. There's still some.
He's having a down year, right? Yeah. He's trading from a place of weakness.
Yeah. Look, I mean, the one that that I say I don't want to trade him, I would if it, you know, completely blew me away, but I wouldn't be happy about it, would be Arvidsson.
Well, that's the thing. Like, if you're doing that, And I think that Arvidsson's a very important piece of your team, like a very important piece of your team. If you're doing that, you have to have your socks blown off. Like you, because yeah. The thing is, you have to sell that to you guys and your fans and your room, okay? So you have to be able to, like, if you're trading a guy like Arvidsson, we all have to look at that trade and say, oh, I get it. That's the only way you can make that work.
Yep. Good stuff as always, Elliot. Is it offense or offense? I'm just kidding. I'll be better next week, I promise.
I say offense. Like, as in, my comments are always offensively.
I'll be better next week. I'm sorry for this.
Hey, it's all good.
Hey, thanks for always kind of rolling with it. We always have fun with you every Thursday. So thanks for doing this, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys. Have a great weekend.
All right, you do the same. Thanks, Elliot Freeman. Sportsnet brought to you every week by Kerry Zire, Remax Elite. Your chance to win tickets to the next home game on the other side. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nicely done. Thank you, Kyle. Elliot Freedman brought to you by Kerry Zire, Remax Elite. Every Thursday at 1 o'clock. Now a chance for you to win tickets to the next Predators home game. Be listening to the interview. Preds and Islanders next Thursday at Bridgestone Arena. The day before, the night before Valentine's Day. Maybe that's an early Valentine's Day gift. But you must answer this first, and you must call in to answer it. You cannot text the answer, even though the text line and the call-in line are the same. 615-737-1025. 737-1025. The question is, who for the Calgary Flames just got hurt in their last game and will not be in the lineup tonight versus the Preds? Who for the Calgary Flames just got hurt in their last game on Tuesday night and will be out of the lineup this evening against Nashville? Very important.
Oh,
piece.
I know the answer to that. It's
me too. 737.
Did you get that?
1025 as the lines explode.
Boom shakalaka.
Speaking of the Predators, we here at 102.5 The Game are hitting the road again this year to Columbus, Ohio, to see the Preds take on the Blue Jackets at Nationwide Arena, where they have a cannon. And hopefully you don't have to hear the cannon.
Well, I'm going to hear the cannon. Well, yeah, I hope
if they don't score,
right.
Predators shut them out, you don't have to hear the cannon. And that game is going to be Saturday, March 14th. Tickets will go on sale Monday, February 17th at 10 a.m. The trip is organized by Simply a Fan. Visit simplyafan.com for other upcoming sports adventures. Transportation will be provided by Gray Line of Tennessee. For more details, visit thegamenashville.com. Were you a part of that last year?
I was.
That's what I thought.
And I'm going this year. So that'll be fun.
But last year it wasn't to Columbus, though.
No, last year it was St.
Louis.
To the Lou.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was St. Louis. So, yeah,
I've been
cool.
to both places.
I've never been to Columbus.
Oh, so, I have.
So I'm excited.
It's really nice. I
hope I don't hear the cannon.
Right downtown.
Otherwise, I'll go, holy moly.
Yeah. Just remember, when you hear AC/DC.
For those
about to rock, cover your ears right there.
Fire.
When you hear for those about to rock, cover your ears because the cannon's going off. Or just root for a shutout.
Yeah, that'd be good. So it'll be cool.
So go to the GameNashville.com for more details. This is going to be a really cool trip. That's coming up March 14th. Are you going to be on this again?
I am. That's what I'm told.
All right, good. So, very good.
You know, be a fun little bus trip. We'll sing.
We've already got a winner? All right. David Krupp. Congratulations, David. You'll be at Bridgestone Arena next Thursday to see the Preds and the Islanders. Barry Trotz and company in town. It was Mark Giordano is who's out of the lineup tonight. The Flames captain. I didn't want to say who's the Flames captain because you wouldn't have to be listening to the interview to know that answer. But Giordano was hurt in their last game, and he is. They thought it was bad. They thought it was really bad, but they have said today that they've put him on IR. I think so. He's going to be out for at least a week. And by the way, Shea Weber was put on IR today by the Canadians, too. I don't know if you saw that. But he's dealing with a hamstring injury. But initially when it happened, they thought, uh-oh, this may have to be surgically repaired. But I guess they have decided no surgery will be required. But he will be out tonight versus the Predators.
Well, hate that for Shea, but you like hearing that Giordano is going to be out of the lineup tonight because that he's very good for them. And Brent and I were sitting there talking last night, and you know it's always great to have the ear of a coach because he can give you the scouting report. He likes this team. They have some talent. They have young talent. They're in the playoffs right now, but a similar position of the Predators. And, you know, they're one that we've talked about this, Darren, that I'm not a huge believer in, but they keep proving me wrong. They did it last year, winning the Pacific, and, you know, they've been hanging around this year. So it's a very important game tonight. That was something that Elliot had in his 31 thoughts, that suddenly the game between Calgary and Nashville is very, very important because of all the points that are on the line for a playoff spot. So it's a tough environment to play in up there. There have been some battles. That was one thing Brent talked about last night. You remember those battles back in the day between Nashville and Calgary?
When Aginla was there?
Yeah. Oof. Well, Aginla and Tutu would always knock heads. And you had
Volkoon.
Volkoon and Kiprusoff.
Yeah, there's been some games absolutely Predators fans in the past remember games, especially against the Flames, but especially in Calgary.
There was a game that Brent talked about that it was the end of the game. The Predators had just scored the empty netter. They were going to win the game. Daryl Sutter was the head coach of the Flames at the time. He puts out a line of goons, essentially, and the Predators had their, you know, their normal lineup out there. Barry Trotz calls him back in, then puts out, you know, guys like Tutu and Hartnell and Darcy Hordichuk. They drop the puck, and all you know what breaks loose. And that I believe, was the game where Chris Mason was skating towards center ice to go for Kiprusoff, and Trotsky told him to get on back to the net. In so many words. But
so, yeah, something to that effect.
Yeah. But those were the days.
That's fantastic. So Preds and Flames tonight, 8 o'clock puck drop, 7 o'clock pregame. Everything heard right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We will also hear from Jerry Stackhouse in about 15 minutes to talk about their big win last night at Memorial Gym over LSU. So that's coming up in about 15. We'll be back here with more on ESPN 102.5 The Game. More stuff at thegamenashville.com. A chance for you to enter and win something for your loved one. Luxenhaus Day Spa in Franklin. Valentine's Couples Retreat Package. It's worth $650. You and your special someone can receive a Swedish massage, facial, and a pedicure. Couples Retreat includes 2 50-minute Swedish massages, 2 classic European facials, and some pedicures. Go to thegamenashville.com to enter to win.
The Titans have made some news.
They have.
They have hired a coach.
And I'm actually glad to see this.
Yeah, I like this too.
Because we were kind of speculating. Our gut feeling was saying that were not going to – huh?
I mean, he's not going to be for the position that you think. It's inside linebackers.
Oh, you're right. Okay. I just assumed – mistake – quickly, because this is just coming out. Yeah, you're right. It's not the D.C. Okay. Yeah,
they're hiring Jim Haslett, longtime coach, as inside linebackers coach for the Titans. So Jim Haslett, been around a long time, 24 years. Jim Wyatt just put this out on TitansOnline.com. So that tells me there are more and more indications that Vrabel is going to be the DC. And they're bringing in Hazlitt to be the inside linebackers, but he's been a head coach. He's got a lot of experience, so I like adding a veteran to the staff.
Where's he coming from?
That's what I was trying to figure out. I don't know where he's been. I know I thought I saw that he, for some reason, I thought he was in the XFL, to be honest with you. But he's been around for a long time. Obviously, DC in Pittsburgh, was head coach in New Orleans.
Last coach in New Orleans before Sean Payton.
Yeah.
Crazy enough.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. But where he was before that. All these things seem to happen during a break or right when we're coming back from a break. But he's 64 years old. His last job
He wasn't on an NFL staff last year, was he?
Yeah, his last job was the Bengals 16 to 18. He was a linebackers coach there.
So he wasn't on a staff last year. So what was he doing?
I don't know. Just hanging
chilling?
Out? Chilling? Yeah, I guess.
Okay.
So there you go.
We were looking at this thing on NFL Live called Bold Predictions. They were just kind of making bold predictions.
Well, it was the reality meter is what it was called.
Well, it's called Bold Predictions, and then they would have a reality meter of 1 to 10 of Dan Graziano, and I don't remember who else was on the panel. They would then weigh
Rod
in.
Rod Ninkovich.
Is that who it was?
Yep.
Okay, and they would weigh in with their number of, okay, whether that has a chance or no chance or is it somewhere in between. So they would throw out categories in bold predictions, and one of them was Arizona would move on from David Johnson in the offseason. One of them would be Todd Gurley. The Rams will explore options to maybe trade away Todd Gurley, which, by the way, I just saw literally minutes ago that Todd Gurley and the Rams are set to meet evidently this week to discuss his future.
I think there could be a little something to that, maybe.
I don't think there's any doubt.
Yeah. I don't know.
And then we saw the Titans come up. And their bold prediction was Ryan Tannehill and Derrick Henry both come back to the Titans, but they come back without a tag being used. Dan Graziano gave that a 1. And who did you say who was with him?
Rob Ninkovich.
Rob gave it a 2. In other words, they do not believe for a minute that if both of those guys are back in the fold here in Nashville with the Titans, that it is just on contracts, not on any tags.
I
probably would agree with that.
Yeah, I think it's going to be hard to get them both done right now, you know, before free agency opens without having to use some sort of tag. Now, you might get one or the other. And I believe that Tannehill, because you said this the other day, Tannehill's probably the one that you use the tag on because he's more likely. Number one, it'd be about $27 million, which is the ballpark of where you'd like to be. He's more likely than not to sign it. I think if you tag Henry, he's not signing it. He's going to hold out until he gets a bigger deal. And so you want to try and avoid that. But, I mean, in a perfect world, you just get them both signed and everybody's happy. But we all know it's not a perfect world, and they're going to try and maximize their ability and get as much out of the Titans as possible. Or they're going to, you know, try and test the free agent waters. But, you know, to say that it's going to get done without using the tag, I don't believe it. That's why the tag's there.
I don't believe it either. I think that one's a hard one. That's a hard pill to swallow that actually happens without either one of them getting tagged. What's interesting is kind of the conversation we had during the break when watching this take place on NFL Live of who's more realistic. And I think I've certainly brought it up, but the more I've thought about it, the more it makes sense put Tannehill on a tag because the tag is $27 million, because we keep throwing out dollar figures at $30+ million, and I keep going, why? Why would you? And it's like, if the best you got is, well, it's the price of doing business, I think you got to do better than that. Like, that can't be your reason why, because that's gotten people in trouble. Yeah, well, we just got to. I mean, we just had to. We didn't have a choice. Actually, you do have a choice. But then it raises the question of Derrick Henry makes even more sense because of everything that we've talked about in the running back position, how it's valued. So it would make even more sense just to tag him. But then you get the who's got more leverage, Tannehill or Henry? Well, they both have leverage. There's no doubt about that. Tannehill would be sought out.
Yeah, but
if he doesn't
think,
sign here, he's going to be sought out. But
I think Henry has more leverage.
Henry's got more leverage. He's coming off being the leading rusher in the NFL. Okay, he's got the most leverage. So he's got the ability to do what Le'Veon Bell and Ezekiel Elliott did. It didn't work out for Bell. Like, it absolutely flopped for him.
Yeah.
Okay, it blew up in his face. It worked out for Ezekiel Elliott, I guess. I don't know. I mean, the Cowboys didn't make the playoffs.
Yeah, but he got paid.
He got paid.
Definitely got paid. No,
he didn't have his greatest season ever. So, I mean, I guess in the end, so he's probably more in the Elliott category. If that's what he wanted to do, he's got the leverage. Yeah. He can say, I'm not signing that. But is that a path that you really want to go down? Does he want to go to Cabo, too, and wait?
No. No, because I think it affected Ezekiel Elliott, too, as you saw. I mean, he got better as the year went on, but the team wasn't very good. I think for Derrick Henry, you know, he has the argument of, well, I made Tannehill better. And we'll pause there.
Let's pause there because we have Vanderbilt head basketball coach Jerry Stackhouse on the line with us. Snuck in a little early, and that is good by us. Coach, how you doing?
Hey,
congratulations
great,
on the
guys.
Win.
How you going?
Great. Well, not as good as you right now. You should be all smiles today.
Man, yeah, slept a little better last night than I had.
I bet.
Throughout the previous few nights, man. But no, it's good, man. Really happy for our kids, man. They played their butts off and was able to get a win and get off the snide.
Well, you're right. They did, and they've been doing that. You've seen, look, the game. They hung in there. They battled. They kept fighting with Florida on Saturday. So you're better equipped to tell us than us. We're watching it from more afar. You're there every day inside the wall seeing it. Did you feel this coming? Could you feel like they were getting better? Did you feel like the buy-in was there? Did you feel like the effort was there for you guys to knock off a ranked team last night?
Yeah, man, I think we really understood, you know, who we are and what and what we have to do, you know, on a day-to-day basis. And nothing changes for us. I mean, nothing, you know, it still looks the same. You know, the things that we do, the drills that we do, to try to mimic, you know, live game actions every day. You know, we're staunch about doing those things every day. That can be monotonous, but I think our guys understand that that's where we have to go. We have to, you know, build a culture within the basketball of work and having a workman's identity. And these guys have bought into that. And I think that's, you know, whatever we make up with our shortcomings as far as just, you know, just raw talent, you know, we have to make up with it by being smart and obviously playing extremely hard. And then our guys, I got no problem with their compete level or their effort.
I know, Jerry, you were not there last year, so you didn't get to see it firsthand and how they reacted. I felt like when Garland went down early in the season, they just never recovered. A lot of it psychologically, mentally, like their best guy, you know, what he brought behind the scenes, they just never recovered. Can you talk about that? You've gone a long playing career. You dealt with, you know, star players going down with injuries. How did your team handle Neesmith going down? Because he meant, just like Garland last year, he meant so much to this roster. Can you talk about what it's like going through that? Through your team having to get past that hurdle and realizing he's not going to be here, guys, so we have to keep moving ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a little bit deja vu, right? You know, for those guys that were here last year, kind of almost seeing it happen again, what happened with Darius, and now same thing with Aaron, because a lot of everything that we were doing was centered around, you know, just his elite ability to shoot the basketball, and everybody kind of benefited from that. And so we were kind of committed to that style and how to play. And it's a little different. Like in the pros, it's something you got pros. So it's like somebody goes down and, you know, this guy's chomping at the bit, but they have the talent level to be able to step in and, you know, maybe not be as good as the guy that went out, but at least, you know, so you know, you feel like you got a comparable type of talent, you know. And for us, you know, it's just about trying to revamp things on the fly, you know, trying to figure out now how can we best take advantage of the strengths of the team now, obviously with Saban and Dylan Moore at the forefront of things, Scotty as well. Max had a great game last night. He's kind of been our glue guy all season. So it's really by committee, and I think that's what these guys have adopted, understanding that we got to do it together. We just don't have, you know, that guy really that we can just throw the ball to and say, go get us something. You know what I'm saying? Saban's probably closest that we have to that, but we're better when we have some continuity. And, man, I think they, their approach with it, obviously they had a glaze over their eyes as well for a couple games after that, and maybe that was some of the reason we shot the ball as poorly as we did, just because guys were getting used to new roles. But now, I think they're starting to understand the things that we need to do. And it's been like a whole process, man, like since we've been here trying to install things, right, and have a foundation of for the next group of recruits that come in. Now we don't have to teach everything to everybody the way we started out this time. Now there's going to be, players that are going to help that learning curve from our incoming players. So, we see that and understand that we're building toward it. And I think we're going to win some more games, man, because they're really starting to believe.
Vanderbilt basketball coach Jerry Stackhouse on the line with us. What was working in particular last night? Obviously, you guys put 99 points on the board for Saban Lee and Max Evans. They had huge games.
I mean, again, I think it sounds, real easy, right? But it's like the ability to make shots. We saw the ball go in the basket. I mean, we've been getting good looks. Even when we're 5 for 30 or we were 0 for 25, we liked the looks that we were getting. Guys, shots that they work on and catching them with them. 10% of those shots were probably questionable shots, but most of those shots we were getting were good ones, and we got those same good looks last night and mixed in getting our feet in the paint and getting some paint points as well. So I think that was huge. But again, I think more so defensively, we were able to kind of slow them down. That's a really talented team. I don't know if there's more talented, top to bottom, from the guys that they play, they're seven, eight players that they play in the league. You got four guys averaging, right at over 13 points. So, we had our work cut out for that, and I thought our guys were up to the challenge with that one.
Jerry Stackhouse is with us, the head basketball coach at Vanderbilt. And, Coach, I know this has probably been a whirlwind of a week with getting your first SEC win as a college basketball coach, but also Malcolm Turner announcing his resignation as athletic director. What has it been like for you now that Candace Story Lee is going to take over in the interim as the AD, the guy that hired you, brought you in, now he is stepping away?
Yeah, I mean, it was, obviously it caught us all a little bit by surprise. But, again, a lot of this, the inner workings of what was going on at that level is a little bit above my pay grade, So I try not to worry about, a whole lot of that. Obviously, in the process of me coming here, Malcolm and Candace were, in lockstep. So I had just as much interaction, probably more so with Candace than I did with Malcolm. He's working on whatever the strategic plan and different things. And we just had our head down as far as just trying to build a program. And that's all I'm focused on now. I had a great conversation, great talk with Candace, and it's still all system to go. It's the same mission is still there for us, and I'm just as committed to it as I was when I first got here. So, and now obviously we're starting to trend in the right direction as far as what we're doing on the basketball court. So I'm excited about that. And just, obviously it's tough. Malcolm was a friend, he was a colleague, but, he made a tough decision that was, and he felt it's in his best interest. But now it's just about us, about Vanderbilt and the people that are here and trying to accomplish the goal that we set out.
Last night was obviously a first step in the right direction in what you're trying to build over there. But as you know, and you knew this when you took the job, that Vanderbilt is a unique job. It's an academic institution. It's in the SEC. Sometimes you have to work a little harder than the other guys to get where you want to go. So what is your long-term commitment and plan to the Vanderbilt basketball program?
I mean, obviously, it starts with players, right? I think we got to get in players. We got to get the right fit. And I think the message of when me coming here was we were trying to find our ceiling. And I think that that's still in play, you know, of us trying to, you know, be creative and get some, you know, some guys in here that are obviously able to be successful, you know, in the academic environment that's here, but, you know, can play basketball at a high level. And that's a, you know, it's a little bit of a challenge to find that mix, but those guys are out there and we're on them. You know, we're waiting on a couple right now to make some final decisions. And, you know, and then we got some secondary and kind of tertiary guys too, that we still feel that would be a good fit, but, you know, we invested a lot of time and energy with, you know, recruiting and everything. So we're just going to wait it out. But I think, you know, a signature win like last night, you know, helps, right? You know, that guys know that, you know, okay, these guys are playing good basketball. You know, good environment. You know, I think Aaron, you know, probably in a few months, you see him be another first round draft pick. And I think we put him in a good position, you know, to knowing that he's playing within an NBA system, so to speak. And he had tremendous success with that before he got hurt. So we want to continue to get those type of guys, but, you know, more guys that make up the identity of what we want to see. You know what I'm saying? We want some dogs. You know what I'm saying? Quite frankly, you know what I'm saying? We want some guys to get into the ball, to really get after defensively. I mean, I love offense. Obviously, I got a plethora of different things we can do offensively, but where we really hang our hat is on the defensive end. And that's almost a mentality. So we want to get guys to have that mentality and not have to try to grow that out of them. You know, and I think that's our approach. That's how we're trying to tackle that piece of it, but more so it's just the grind every day, coming in with the same, you know, like I said, it can get monotonous, but we're going to do it every day. We're going to close our touch closeouts, our shell drill, you know, how we want to defend pick and rolls, how we want to defend DHOs, you know, and then our little bit of a press, a little bit of our zone stuff, just making sure that we continue to get sharp and build our baseline so it becomes our identity. So that's kind of where we are.
You have a lot of different personalities and different types of kids on your team, but I'm always curious, when you have a player that's talented in Scottie Pippen Jr., everybody knows who his dad is. You played against him. He played in the league for a long time. That has to add a little bit of pressure to him to live up to that. How do you coach that? How do you help him through that process of being his own player?
No, man, he's been Scottie Pippen Jr. all his life. So, you know, he knows what that looks like and what that, you know, what comes with that. You know, no guys know that his dad's a Hall of Famer, and they're going to probably challenge him. You know, and that's, you know, he has to be ready to play every night, just on the fact that they want to say that they beat Scottie Pippen's son. So I mean, but if that was something, a challenge that he didn't want, that he was going to run from, then I don't think basketball needed to be what he chose to do. But you know, he obviously has the talent to play at a high level. He's just gotten better and better, man. He was like, you know, he was all over the place early on, as you expect a freshman. And you know, I handed him the ball from day one, right? So like, okay, we got to plan for the future, you know, not worried, you know, so much about just quick fixes right now. We've got to look more long term. So I thought he was our best option to make sure that we had a ball handler, not only for this year, but giving him the reps that's necessary for him to be, you know, our primary ball handler going forward. And I mean, he's taking that challenge, gotten better and better each game. Does he make some mistakes? Does he, you know, if I had some hair, I probably would be pulling it out sometimes. But you know, but he's, you know, he's competitive, and you know, and he's really smart. So I'm happy to work with him.
If you had hair, you'd probably be pulling it out, looking at the schedule, going, "We just beat LSU, so things must get easier, right?" Oh, at Mississippi State, Kentucky, at Florida, at Tennessee, your next four. Holy moly, that is not easy. What's facing you ahead? So hopefully, you can build off a win like this, because it doesn't get any easier, does it?
No, I mean, none of it's easy, man. I mean, I think it's, you know, was last night easy? No. But, you know, again, that's what we prepare for and try to give ourselves a chance to win. You know, will we get 66 points out of two players, to my 65 points out of two players on Saturday? I don't know. I hope so. Yeah. But it's, you know, we just got to try to continue to find ways to win. We've been in every game. I think our magic number is somewhere around to me, I think 10 to 12 threes, man. If we're somewhere in the 10 to 12 three range of makes, then we give ourselves a good chance to be in every game.
Well, go get them in Starkville. Congratulations on the win last night, and thanks for joining us.
Appreciate you, man. Thanks for having me. All right, have a good one.
All right, you too. That is Vanderbilt basketball coach Jerry Stackhouse, and we do appreciate him joining us. How about that? They beat LSU 99-90 last night here at Memorial Gym, and then they have to go to Starkville on Saturday. They have to host Kentucky on, what is it, next Tuesday night here.
Yep. Carl Ravitch will do that game.
That's right. Carl Ravitch, who we had on yesterday, said he's going to be doing that game.
Yep.
Then they got to go to Gainesville and play Florida, and then they have to go to Knoxville and play Tennessee.
That's
their next four.
But, hey, one win like they had last night can do wonders for a team.
Yeah, you're right. No doubt about it. Boy.
Good way to end the show.
What a roller coaster ride today was, man. We covered a lot of ground. Scott Ramsey to get things going. Jordan Matthews. Jim Wyatt. Stanley Nelson. Mike Vick, 30 for 30. Part 2 is tonight on ESPN. Barton Simmons, Elliot Freeman, and Jerry Stackhouse.
Yeah.
Hello!
And by the way, the Titans sent out an email saying that Mike Vrabel has finalized his staff.
So
there you go. I think that answers that question.
And no DC's been hired.
Yep.
Guess we have our answer. That will do it for us today. You have a great rest of your day. We look forward to talking to you tomorrow at 10 a.m. to wrap up the week. Stay tuned. Jaron and the GM is next.